The following episode is dedicated to Billy, Kalee, Michael, Les, and the rest of the members of the Tampa Bay Anime Club. Mango Tango, my friends. Mango Tango.
Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution. As we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain. In charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place. If you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television. Due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back. So stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in. Since they going back to show in Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it. To celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it. To celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary. With Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Madison. This is episode 45 of The Prerogative. On this week's episode, we cover an anime from 2007, which is, of course, as many of you know from, as I've said in the past, probably one of the toughest periods of anime, as far as anime coming out of Japan. Not a lot of good stuff, but there are a few bright, shining examples of just superiority and wonderful quality of story and everything, and this is one of them. This week on The Prerogative, we cover Nodami Cantabile, a anime about a couple of music students in Japan as they journey together. But we'll get more into synopsis in a little bit. But this anime is a bit dear in my heart. This is one of the animes that I got to watch with my old anime club, the Tampa Bay Anime Club, which it's hard to believe it's, I think, coming close to, well, been over at least a year and a half, since I last got to be with the club. Which doesn't seem that long in the long run, but it's amazing how time flies sometimes. But I joined the Tampa Bay Anime Club around 2006. I think it was my second year at MetroCon. I saw a table that they had there and decided to go meet them. When I first joined the club, they were meeting in a Bennigan's, a sort of sports pub, in a back room. They eventually moved to a Perkins that was further north. And at first it was a much longer ride. And that was the fun part of going to the anime club. I actually enjoyed, I'd have to leave 3 hours ahead, but, or in the case, 4 hours ahead, especially when I lived closer back in Largo, because it actually takes two places in my life. When I first started going to the club, I lived in Largo, close to Indian Rock Beach. For those who, again, those who know the Pinellas County area, the whole Tampa Bay area in Pinellas County, I lived close to Indian Rock Beach in Largo. And then during my time at the anime club, I eventually moved to a house in Clearwater, where I lived for a couple of years. And it actually made it much easier to go to the club. I still had to leave at least 2.5 hours ahead because of the bus schedule, which I look back at now at the place where I live now, and I'm like, wow, I would so not be bitching about that bus schedule now. Because at the time, you know, it was, you know, half hour, and if it was a smaller street, hour, unless it was the weekend, then it, like, everything was like an hour wait, you know, or hour between buses. I'm like, wow, this is so unlike New York and that stuff, and now I'm in an area that doesn't have a bus service at all, and I'm like, I would so be willing to take that right now. But, you know, part of the fun was the journey, you know, sitting on the bus, the air-conditioned bus, especially in Florida, and, you know, riding down, hopping on buses, and, you know, it would give me time to feed and read my comics and stuff like that, so it was always enjoyable. And the Tampa Bay Anime Club, all my friends there, just a great bunch of people. You know, had fun with, you know, we'd eat dinner, watch anime. And the thing that was great about the Tampa Bay Anime Club, to my perspective, is we didn't watch anything that was already licensed. Which did open me up to a whole bunch of new and different anime. It's why I watch a bunch of different anime nowadays. I probably wouldn't be watching as many different animes as I would if it wasn't for the Tampa Bay Anime Club. And it really is a thing to where you think you know what a series is about, and then you watch it, and there's something in there that you find you love. A comedic character, a comedy bit, and you fall in love with it. And you've had those situations many a time in the club. You know, with shows like Hero Man, with Nodame Cantabile, and other shows like that, to where you were attached to see if you like it, and then the entire club liked it, and we ended up watching the entire series. Nodame Cantabile is one of those series, and in fact, we pretty much watched this series, the second season, where they're in Paris. And it was always a show that everybody enjoyed, because we always enjoyed the comedy, along with the great character development and the music of the series. Maybe I enjoyed the music a bit more, because there would be times I'd find myself conducting in the air, because I'm a strange person. They already knew that.
I know, right?
But it was just a great part of my life. So many great animes I remember watching as part of that club. And it was basically, it became my Saturday night staple. And it's funny, because it actually coincides with, you know, the departure of Toonami. It's sort of fun, you know, the old Toonami, which was, to an extent, especially towards the end, a really childish, especially considering, in fact, it was only showing Naruto. And then I had this anime club that I started going to that, you know, had a wide variety of anime that was a bit more mature in taste, not necessarily in content, but as more mature sense of, you know, what I was watching in a variety. It wasn't just action anime. You know, there was drama, there was romance, there was tons of stuff, different animes we were watching. And as, you know, the Tampa Bay Anime Club ends no more than half a year later, Toonami restarts back up, and gets mostly action anime, but again, that difference and variation of style, because we do have things like Dead Man's Wonderland, which I actually first watched with my anime club back in Tampa. Things like Thundercats, shows like Symbionic Titan, and Eureka 7, and Tenchi GPX, or GXP, excuse me. You know, there is a variety there that you feel, and while Toonami will always be action animation, there's a sense of maturity there that, again, it's just like, I can sense sort of the growth in me as an anime fan, and I can see that growth from starting as a Toonami fan. The different animes I was watching as I grew up, becoming part of the club, the different animes I watched as part of the club, and how it's led up to my growth as an anime fan now. And what I embrace with Toonami, and the things I like about Toonami are completely different than the things I liked about the shows back when I first watched them. And, you know, shows that I loved before, there's a deeper sense of love for some of those old shows that I have and rewatching them because of some of the, you know, things I obtained in watching different anime with the club. So this show just sparked a lot of great memories because of that. And that's not to discount really the enjoyment of the series, because this is a very good series. It's not just nostalgic feeling here for my old anime club. It's definitely a great series. It's built on character development, which I love. It's got great slapstick comedy. It's very subdued that I very much enjoy. A lot of great comedic bits here. It's a slow series. And I like a slow series. You know, that sometimes I think there's far too many... One of my complaints about the period between 2005 and 2009 was that a lot of series seemed to just rush through plot points and rush through the story, because the story wasn't important. It was about, ooh, these... I don't want to use the term cliche, but, you know, oh, these pretty boys and all these characters that were really made to appeal to a minute part of the fan base and didn't fulfill the story out well. Here you have a series where it's about the characters, but it's about that character growth. It's about the story of the characters rather than just some cliche, oh, we have the pretty boy who's moody and is emo, because this will attract fangirls. And yes, I'm looking at you, Death Note and Code Geass. You know, series that were supposed to be good and had high expectations and then told us all to F off. Nodami wasn't like that. Nodami was an underdog. And in my opinion, turned out to probably be the best anime between the period of 2005 and 2009. But we'll get to more of that in a little bit. Let's go over synopsis before we get into our review. Our plot follows two students who meet one day unexpectedly. Shinji Chikori is a arrogant and multilingual perfectionist who is a top student at Momigaka's College of Music and has a secret ambition to become a doctor. Born into a musical family, he is talented at the piano and violin and once lived abroad in the music capitals of the world as a young boy, namely Prague, but is trapped in Japan because of a childhood phobia of airplanes and the ocean. In contrast, Megumi Noda, or Nodami, is a piano student at Momigaka who is notorious for her messiness and eccentric behavior. Despite being very talented, Nodami prefers to play by ear rather than according to the musical score. Thus, she is regarded as sloppy and playful. When they meet by accident, Nodami quickly falls in love, but Chikori kind of doesn't because, well, he sees Nodami as a freak, but is drawn to the way she's able to play her music. As their relationship with each other causes them both to develop and grow, along the way, they meet some other crazy peoples, like Mitsumi, Mime, and Stressman, and make lasting friendships. This is their journey. And with that, let's get into our review of Nodami Cantabile.
Yeah.
back, and let's get right into it as we usually do. Let's start off with music, and definitely being that this is a series that is based at a music school, off musicians, a more important classical music, the soundtrack is just incredible. Let's just say that right off the bat. The score is incredible. It's probably one of the best individual scores of an anime series. Some might see it as cheating, considering that a lot of the scores, as we'll talk about in a bit, are classical scores from classical musicians, and it's like, you know, yeah, it's hard to compare other things to Beethoven, but it, the way to use it, but we'll get into that in a second. Let's start off with probably talking about the more weaker part of the music, which is the opening and closing themes, and part of that, it's for two reasons, and I'll get to the second reason in a second, but the first reason, right off the bat, has nothing to do with that it's bad. It has to do with the fact that, again, you're talking about sort of pop music, comparing it with classical music. It's apples and oranges, and the classical style, at least in my mind, is always going to win out in that standpoint. I mean, unless you completely screw up the music and stuff like that, you just can't compare it to Beethoven. You know, you can't compare Beethoven or Mozart or Bach or all of those. But, you know, the openings here are very good, and they do a wonderful job of fitting the style of the anime. The first one, as I quickly open, you know, you would think I'd have the titles in my notes, you know, on the days where I want to actually say the name of the titles. But the opening for the entire series, or at least the first season here, which is what we're reviewing, is Allegro Cantabile Sound, is the name of the title. It is just a wonderful, playful song. You know, and you hear the piano in there, and you hear different musical instruments. More importantly, really matches the theme of the series. And one thing you're going to hear me talk about in this review a lot is Cantabile, which is, you know, the idea of sort of, as far as instrumental music is concerned, of playing music like you're singing it, rather than it on a very technical note standpoint. In other words, sort of the emotion, playing the instrument to the sense of making people feel emotion, rather than just playing on a very technical level. And this song perfectly matches that theme, the playfulness, the emotions. It's the instrumental parts of this song are very, very much like, you know, somebody singing the song. And it creates this very vivacious sound alongside the vocals for this song. And it's just a very playful piece. And it really gets you into each episode when you hear it before the episode starts. And, of course, the animation is very playful among it. And just the use of, you know, whites and rainbows and clouds and skies. And all this playfulness that, you know, the opening animation does. The second animation, or second, or should I say the closing song, I got caught up on animation. The first closing, or first ending, I should say, is Kona ni Chikaro D. It's sung by a beautiful pop singer by the name of Crystal K. Crystal K is a very unique singer upon herself, as she is actually half African American, half Japanese Korean. And she's got a wonderful voice. I actually, when I think about it, I compare it to Alea. And she's part of this group of singers who, you know including Hikaru Utada, Ayumi Hamasaki. It's Eri Ari. I'm blanking on her name and I hate it. But she sung the final ending song for Final Fantasy XII. And she's great on the piano. A list of sort of Japanese pop singers that sort of fit that same style that, you know, when Leia, when she was alive. And all those great sort of R&B pop singers that we had in the early thousands. I love that style and sort of fits that same style. I really think, though, the artists I just mentioned, if they came over to America and actually had the backing behind them, which is the one thing that Japanese pop singers don't have when they come over to America, it's really the backing. You know, they sing in English and they're beautiful, but they don't have the promotion. They don't really have the backing behind them as they should. They could be better and bigger than Lady Gaga and that Katy Perry and what's that other singer who's big right now who's all in Pink, and I'm completely blanking on her name, Nicki Minaj. Again, I still laugh at the not that she's horrible or anything, but I just laugh at considering past. There's a story there for another day. Anyways, I don't even know why I went into it, but, you know, Crystal K, I know why I went into it, because I wanted to talk more about Crystal K and her beautiful voice, which is her here in the ending. It's just, this song, it's you can envision sort of the characters of the anime sort of meeting in the bar afterward as this song plays. It's just sort of this great song about friendship, and again, that great sort of R&B sort of pop soul sensation of the early 2000s is definitely here and definitely helps that. It is a gorgeous ending song. The second ending, which is weaker because it's more melancholy and sort of mellow, which probably putting the same thing here, which matches more of the second half of the series, is called Allegro Cantabile. looking at the wrong notes, it's Sagittarius. It's by Satsumi and the Noda Orchestra. Setmitsu. And I'm probably pronouncing these names wrong. I apologize. Setmitsu also helps sing the opening. Sagittarius, which again, like I said, very melancholy, very more mellow, which kind of fits the later half of the plot of the series. But compare, again, going for more of the upbeat sort of sensation of Crystal K's song, it's, I definitely like the first opening better. And it's just that first song just has that pop, that feel that draws you into the song, as opposed to this, which is very melancholy and, like I said, mellow, and I keep using those words. But I just don't feel it lives up to sort of this. It's just that sort of notch below between what the opening song and that first ending has going for the series. With that, let's move on to the actual overall score of the series. And again, this is much better than those opening and closings just by the mere fact. Again, it's classical music. It's Beethoven. It's Mozart. It's Bach. It's Tchaikovsky. But it's also tons of other musicians whose wonderful scores you probably haven't heard. And it's not the thing to where, like, there's two aspects to the overall score that's in the series. There is the background music, and then there is the music that the orchestras are playing when there are scenes where they're, like, doing performances. Now, the background music is sort of a combination of original sort of instrumental pieces alongside classical music pieces, and they flow really good together in the background. Really, the only time you really notice sort of the background piece, I mean, is when it's a really, really famous song, like when they're using, you know, Tchaikovsky's, you know, from, you know, Dance of the Sugar Plum, you know, dun 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 dun. Dun 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 da 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 da, and they're using, you know, Joyful Joyful and a lot of other well known pieces that immediately jumps out because they're really, really well known. They're one of those pieces that even people who really aren't into music, they know the piece and it immediately jumps out to them. That's the only sort of, I don't even want to call it a downside, because it's a victim of the own aspect of using that type of well-known music. But it flows perfectly with sort of the more original instrumental pieces and does a great job of creating the mood for each scene. again, it's beautiful, but at the same time, it doesn't overpower the scene. It allows the characters and the emotion and the story being told on the screen to be the center stage and be the one telling the story, and it enhances it. Again, the only time these aspects where it pops out more to the front is, again, when it's the more well-known classical pieces. But even then, it's not overpowering the scenes. And then, of course, there are the music that are played during the times when it's the orchestra. And again, at this point, the music itself is more full frontal. And that's because, in this case, at these scenes, the music is telling the story. And again, I love the fact that they're using a lot more of probably not as well-known pieces. And, you know, you have sort of the narration about what you're supposed to be feeling, and it helps you understand sort of the emotions trying to be told with the music, and it's just beautiful to listen to. I actually found myself falling asleep during these scenes, not because they were boring, but because the music is so well done. Because, again, original orchestra actually was built to help do these songs. It's so beautiful. You find yourself falling asleep and wanting to, dream about sort of the images that this music is trying to evaluate and let you in on. And so it's just, as somebody who is a huge fan of what music can do for a series, I love this series just because of its music. It's probably one of the best it's clearly the best soundtrack of an anime between the period of 2005 and 2009. And in my mind, it's one of the best anime soundtracks ever because of the wonderful song, the original songs, the pop songs, the overall score of great classical music. There's been many CDs released as part of the series showcasing a lot of the music. It's just wonderful. I cannot, not stress enough, why people should be listening to this soundtrack. All the things I always talk about music and how it's supposed to enhance the story and everything, this music is what does it. This is the prime example people should be listening to. With that, let's move on to animation. Now let's talk about the overall style of Nodame Kantabile. The overall sort of coloring sensation here is you definitely have a soft line, soft palette style. You could definitely tell that this was done in computer and it had a lot more CG with it. The faults in this series, even though I consider this probably the best of 2005 to 2009, or at least in that period, it doesn't mean there isn't faults with the series, and one of them is there is a clear distinction between the more hand-drawn animation and the more computer, at the very least, computer graphic, computer hand-drawn animation, and the sort of cel-shaded CG feel of certain aspects that feel like they're CG cel-shaded animation. And I'm more talking about, when they show people playing instruments, when you see, like, the fingers dancing on the keyboard of the piano, and, on the horns and the violins and all that stuff, it just pops off instantly that it's either CG in a cel-shaded form, or it's, at the very least, hand-drawn animation on a computer. It has that feel, and it's a very different, distinct feel from what feels like the hand-drawn animation of it. And that's not necessarily, I'm about to say a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, it's not a good thing, it's just something that pops out. And you have, again, it's that distinction between two different styles that are just very obvious, that can sometimes take you out of the fantasy, which, again, you never want to do for your viewer. But as far as the art style itself, it's beautiful to look at. Again, that the use of both soft lines and soft color to create a very sort of soft, realistic sense of reality that I very, very much enjoy. Again, there's a very mellow feel to the animation. a much more down-to-earthness that, again, helps you get into these characters. And speaking of characters, let's get into the character designs. The character designs are wonderful. Something I'll be talking about later again, you know, again, I think one of the things that helps sort of the romantic aspect of this animation is the character designs of the two main characters. Chikori, I'm messing up that name and I don't know why. I just heard it over and over and over again. I hate when I mess up Japanese, but, you know, he, for someone who's supposed to be a pretty boy, you know, there's a ruggedness to him. It's, you know what I compare it to? Oddly enough, I compare it to the main character in Arrow. And I know the character's name is Ollie, but I'm forgetting the actor who plays him. But they have Ollie being that he is very handsome, but he's also ruggedly handsome. He's handsome to enough to where you can understand why girls are into him, but at the same time, he has this sort of ruggedness to him to where, you know, guys want to be him. And not in the sense of, oh, they want to be a pretty boy, but it's like, yeah, that's the kind of guy that I kind of want to be. And you got sort of the same feeling here. There's that, I don't know if ruggedness is the right word, but there's it's a slight sense of sort of masculinity and maturity that he has. That, as a male, allows you to believe in him a whole lot more than if he was just a pretty boy. If he had been the designer of, as I'll open notes here, Ritaro, or some of the other male characters, it may have not been as believable. In the same instance, Megumi Noda, again, that she, you know, went later in the series, when she becomes more cleaned up and she's, you know, more mature, and, you know, that maturity allows that sort of cute, sort of dainty look that she has to be more out, you know, more forward and able to see. But, you know, again, you know, being that sort of messy individual, she's cute and she's not overly sexy. She's got a beautiful body, but it's not something that is just always shown off. So when you get the few scenes that there is sort of that beauty is shown off, especially when it's coincided with sort of comedy in the sense, you get to see it. But at the same point in time, again, while she has sort of this very cute, very dainty, sort of very feminine look about her, well, not feminine is probably the wrong word to use in this case, because she's not feminine whatsoever. I think maybe the right word is there's tomboy. She's got this tomboy feel to her, to where, you know, she's cute and everything, but again, as a guy, you connect with the character for her comedy, for her, you know, again, oddly enough, her messiness. You know, she's not like other girls. Not to say that you fall in love with the character because of that, but you sort of connect with the character on the standpoint of, like, her down-to-earthness. Her realness you connect with. I mean, this is not a character you're going to be, excuse my language, going online getting certain types of doujins about. But as far as watching this series, you know, you connect with the character more because of her actions than just her character design. But the character design helps enhance that with her sort of tomboyness and, as odd as it sounds, her messiness and her sort of, she's almost like that sort of classic, sort of goofy male character turned on its head and made female, which I like about that. And then, of course, you have the other characters who, each one of their personalities sort of really fits the characters, whether it be Ritaro or Sumi, you know, who's, you know, his frizzled hair, and him, especially him being a homosexual and everything. It's just a wonderful look that really does a great job of combining itself. So all the characters are really well thought out. They really enhance each of the characters' plot points and are wonderful to look at. Then you have the special effects in the background. There's really not that many special effects aspects to talk about because, again, there really isn't any action. the thing that's interesting, like the music itself, there's a very colorful way that they animate, but it really has nothing to do with special effects. They do a great job with a couple of the sort of environmental effects that are throughout the series, but for the most part, there really isn't any big special effects pieces needed. Most of the special effects, I think, might be in the CG and the individual playing of the instruments. And those are very decent, even if they, it pops out that it's either cel-shaded CG or it's, hand-drawn animation on a computer. And, of course, you have the backgrounds. And the backgrounds are really, really well done. Again, matching that same sort of soft line, soft palette feel that the rest of the animation has. There's no real backgrounds that pop out to you because it is in a more modern urban setting. Very traditional sort of backgrounds of a slice of life animation. But they're done really, really good. So the quality is there. With that, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to play you a couple of promos, and when we come back, we're going to get into acting and story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared of the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics. And the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The Celebration of a Legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Ready to form Voltron! This is a job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it with acting. And the version I watched is actually the English version. For those who don't know, Udami Cantabile is on Crackled right now, which, if you have a PS3... you can watch it on your PS3. They actually have an app for the PS3 that you can download from the PlayStation Store to watch Crackled. Or you can watch it in PlayStation Home. Or you can just go to Crackled.com and watch it on your computer or your iPad or many other devices that Crackled is part of. But Nodami Cantabile is in their anime show section. So I watched the English version, which... the voice recording was done in L.A., it was by Sony, and a lot of familiar faces are here as I go over the cast list. Doug E. Holtz plays Shinji Chikari. Kate Davis, or it's listed as Kate Davis, slash, also known as Kate Higgins, you know, Sakura from Naruto, plays Megumi Noda. Grant George plays Ryotaro Mine. Steve Stanley plays Matsumi Okuyama. Terrence Stone plays Maestro Franz von Stresemann. Cindy Robinson plays Saiko Takayaga. And this is just like the main cast, and there's many other characters. Unfortunately, one of the things... with the version that's on Crackled, is that they don't have any English credits to see completely everybody who, you know, did voices for the series. And for that matter, English subtitles, it's something that actually really pissed me off. It's like, when they start playing the piece, there's a little sort of Japanese thing that tells you what the piece is. They didn't translate that, and that really pissed me off. It's like, I would like to know what this piece is so I can go find it, please. Because this is a very beautiful piece and I like to go listen to it. Thank you very much. But back to acting. Wonderful job of acting here. Doug Yields, just wonderful job. Chikari. It's just, again, it's that down-to-earth sort of reality-based sort of personality that Chikari has. Or Chikari. I know I'm pronouncing it different ways. It's like I need to go back and listen to it, just like how it's pronounced, and I apologize. It's like, it's been frustrating me the entire review. I can't believe I forgot how to pronounce his name already. But anyways, maybe I should just start saying Shinji since that seems easier. But anyways, you know, what he does for Chikari is just wonderful as far, again, bringing that sort of down to earth, it's very sort of reality based human being, very very common sense, which you immediately connect to with the character. Kate Davis, again, Megumi Noda, again, I think she hits the character perfectly, just the wacky sort of freaky craziness that the character, especially early on in the series. And it does a wonderful job with the more mature aspect of the character later on in the series. There's a couple of times where Megumi's angry and sort of you feel like there's the channeling of Sakura from Naruto into the character, which is kind of funny. It's also a bit distracting, but it's still a wonderful job. And then all the other supporting characters are really great too. You know, Grant George, Ryotaro Mime. Again, each of these characters have their own whacked out, crazy aspect of their personality that is funny to watch, and each of these voice actors do a wonderful job of bringing them out. I thought Steve Stanley did a wonderful job at Masumi Okuyama, and part of the reason I say that is because he could have just as easily gone for the cliche sort of gay guy, and he didn't. I mean, there was a feminine quality to his acting, but it wasn't the sort of cliche feminine aspect that people, you know, oh my god, it's so fabulous type of quality that people would do for a person who is gay. You know, and I really like that. It's a, again, this sort of down-to-earth sort of person who is, you know, a homosexual. You know, and they don't, and I don't say that he's homosexual because of the way he talks. It's pretty obvious. You know, he goes after Chikori. You know, again, his battles with Megumi over Chikori. And, of course, Franz Stresemann by Terrence Stone and the scenes that he's in is absolutely hilarious. And the rest of the voice cast for the characters that they do, there's, again, that sort of, it's that reality base. You believe that you can walk down the street and run into these characters around the corner. It's one of those wonderful qualities of anime that doesn't get talked about enough. That aspect that these characters are so real that you can walk, you know, especially in a slice of life anime or something that takes place in sort of this reality, that you can walk down to the convenience store and happen to run into them buying eggs. They feel like real people. And the voice cast here does a wonderful job of doing that. With that, let's move on to story. And let's talk about the overall plot and theme of Nodami Cantabile. You heard me say earlier, talking about Cantabile, that the emotion, you know the instrument, the I'm stumbling over myself, and I apologize, but the aspect of an instrument playing as if it's singing and trying to reach the emotions being trying to be portrayed through the song rather than playing at a technical aspect. Really, overall, I think that's the theme of this series. Again, the slow building character development and sort of the growing relationship between people as friends and for some of them, into a deeper relationship, a boyfriend and girlfriend, as we see with Megumi and Chikori and other aspects of the different orchestras that are formed during the series. Because it is about more of the embracing of your more emotional, not in a sense of letting your emotions overriding, but the blooming and the growth of your feelings and your emotion, and letting those emotions be expressed in your music, not to the sense to where it ruins the music, but allows you to express whatever song that you are playing so that people can sort of feel the type of story you're trying to tell with the music, rather than playing the music on a more technical aspect. And it's the same in human aspect of embracing your emotions, embracing the story that you're trying to tell yourself, rather than approaching life from a more technical and, oh my god, bam, 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 very rugged structure. Which is something I definitely wish I had more of the ability to do. That's a whole story for a different day. But you definitely feel that overarching theme and plot here within the series. And definitely one thing that helps is, again, the individual character development plots of the series, which is our next talking point. You know, again, the individual characters, they take time to really dive into what makes, at least for the especially the main staff of characters, who they are. And the one thing that taking this directly from the manga, one thing the manga and the original writer, who, you know, she did a wonderful job, as I quickly go up, Tomoko Nimiya, did a wonderful job. It is really portraying these characters. I love slow-built series. I really do. again, one aspect that I always say that a problem with the series that came out with 2005, and I talked about it before, but between 2005 and 2009, is again, that fast pace. Oh, we can just use cliche color by number plot points and rehash stories, and because the story's not important, the character development and the characters' motivations aren't important. What's important is, hey, follow this emo boy, all you fangirls who are now a slowly increasing fan base because we want to get more of your money. And yes, I understand these are commercial aspects and they are about making money, but I think far too many people act as if doing a slow-built story is about, you know, we'll not make any money. As with anything, it's about promotion and really advertising the story, which, again, I sort of talked about here a little bit in, you know, how Rising Star is able to gain so much recognition so fast in the later half of the series because, you know, they're promoted right. It just comes down to plain and simple, didn't want to take the lazy, easy way and promote the easily well-drawn, quickly-drawn stories to make lots of money, which is really what hurt the anime industry a lot, but that's a story for a different day. But, you know, here you have that the slow, and I apologize for going on a sort of rant there, but what really makes this series, again, that slow build. And it's the same for a lot of the comedy, as we'll get into in a second, and there's some great slapstick comedy. Some of it's quick, but a lot of it's also slow as well. But again, that slow-built drama, the sort of slow, I don't want to say fall in love with these characters, because it's not like falling in love, like, oh my god, I'm in love, I wish these characters were, blah, 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 blah. It's that, you know, you fall in love with who these people are, and you want to follow, you want to continue following their journey, and you want to see them get together, you want to, you know, see them succeed at their accomplishment, you know, at what they want to accomplish. You come to care for these characters because of that slow build. And it is the characters, their motivations, and their individual stories to help build this story and make it entertaining to watch. Rather than them being cliche, paper-cutter characters taken out to appeal to a minute fan base who might like this, as in with this series, you know, being that it's supposedly targeted at young, again, it's a prime example of a series that may be necessarily made to target a certain group, in this case, young women, you know, like Kaleidostar, like Princess Tutu, but the quality put in by the author and the, you know, the animation group and everything, make it a series that appeals to a wide range of people. And again, the main reason for that is the slow character development. This series, you know, again, this is a 23-episode series, but again, the story itself, it's not, you know, snail's pace slow, but it's a series to where you have enough of that, and, you know, it's not lightning fast, and it's the sort of slow, but just the right speed for you to get into it. If there was anything sort of negative aspect is there's one or two episodes where it just feels like nothing happens. It's almost like the Brian Michael Bendis effect, you know, where, you know, stuff happened, but it didn't feel like stuff happened. You know, it's almost, you know, it's like an episode, classic episode of Dragon Ball Z. Not to the extreme that Dragon Ball Z did it, but hey, it's almost that, you know, classic, oh, hey, we need to power up for an episode so that we can get to the fighting of next episode. So we're going to spend the next 26 minutes powering up our chi. It's not to that extreme feel, but it is that one's like, okay, so what was really accomplished in this episode? And there's like one or two, possibly three episodes like that in the series. But they don't hurt. Mostly because, again, it's a great segue into our next point, which is the comedy. The comedy is wonderful. And again, I talk about comedy. Comedy is at its best when it lightens the mood of, you know, when it gets to feel a bit too serious. And really enhances the enjoyment of the series. And it also makes you fall in love with the characters. The slapstick comedy between Megumi and Chikari is just wonderful. I remember there are two distinct places that I know our anime club laughed hysterically at. The first one was at the beginning of the series, in the first couple episodes, where the interaction between Chikari and Megumi, you know, him cleaning up her room and everything, just the absolute messy, just, I remember first seeing her house, we're losing it. But the other one, and it's such a, because it's a slow, it literally, the entire episode builds towards it. In fact, as I think about it, it's a joke that builds over two episodes. It's later in the series. And it's when, you know, after that first sort of rising star, I don't want to say production, you know, performance that they do. And Megumi hypnotizes Chikari. And, you know, you see him and he slowly gets on the plane. He's able to get on a plane. And like, wow, Megumi was able to successfully hypnotize. But as it goes on, and it goes into the next episode, you're like, I need to get Crab. And it's like, wait, why does he need Crab? And it slowly revealed that, well, she didn't just make suggestions that, you know, he could get on a plane. She also suggested you should go to Sakura and get me Crab and Sea Urchin and lots of gifts. I remember when that reveal gets hit, we were almost on the floor rolling and laughing because it was hysterical. And it's still hysterical. And that's just some of the examples of sort of the slow build comedy. There's a lot of quick sort of slapstick comedy. You know, the classic, you know, hitting over the heads, like, what is wrong with you? Some of my favorites are between Mime and I need to scroll down here for a second. And sort of the character that he dates towards the end of the series, and sort of it's sort of revealed that he probably continues his relationship with her, Kiari Miki, who's a violinist who is part of the Rising Star Orchestra. But they're the very first time is they're having a party celebrating the Rising Star, and they're suggesting songs, and they instantly hit it off like, a wedding song! And then Mullen does something, suggests a song that she doesn't like, says, we're divorced! And many times, you know, he does something he thinks is gonna make her happy, it doesn't, and you see him in the background, and she's beating the hell out of him. It's hilarious. It's Miki has some very, sort of, very colorful, funny moments as well. But one of the favorite things, comedy-wise, that I love about the series is, again, there's a lot of moments to where it's, somebody does something completely stupid, and it's like, are you freaking kidding me? Are you that dense? Are you that stuff? And the way the animation sort of, the upper half is like, has black lines, like, I cannot believe I'm with this person. God help. It's written over the face. I'm like, God help me. Why am I with this person? Somebody shoot me. End my misery. It's very funny. I love the comedy. And it really helps enhance the series. It brings enjoyment. It doesn't take you out of the series. The comedy doesn't overpower it. It enhances it, and it's wonderful, and it's one of the great aspects of this series. You know, at the end of the day, again, I talk about this being one of the best series between the period of 2005-2009 as our last talking point. You know, I've gone over it. Again, the cookie-cutter feel. And it really is that aspect, and I've talked with my good friend Donovan Moore Grant about this, and that's, you know, things like Code Geass, Gurren Lagann, Death Note, which were supposed to be the flagship titles of this period, along with others like Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, you know, and many other series that weren't as popular and well-known. All of them had this sort of, and a lot of harem anime as well, you know, especially things like, and I'm trying to remember the name of the series, and I am completely blanking on it. I hate that. Shuffle is another series that, again, it was all cookie cutter. It all didn't feel real. It was more about, hey, here are these, what these characters sort of cliches are, and you're fans of these type of characters, so come watch the series, and, you know, let's sell off merchandise and that stuff, and all that. It was the lazy, easy way to get money, rather than, hey, let's promote these wonderful series like Nadami Cantabile, Gundam 00, Kimi no Tanoke, just to name a few, Sakurai, that are wonderful, great stories. And it's not that these stories, and I talk about cookie cutter and cliche, it's not that what Nodame Cantabile is doing is, oh my god, never been done before. But again, it's that aspect of taking a story, having the story being told by the characters, by the character motivations, the individual characters, it's their journey that helps tell the story, but the story is still important. And it's taking these basic aspects and doing the best story you can, rather than, hey, these characters are emo, like the series. And unfortunately, a large base, while they're a minor base, I think, in the anime community, a large base of the anime fans that are online, unfortunately, are the type of people who will just do that. They will watch an anime just because, oh, it has emo pretty boys, this character's so cool, let me do a yaoi manga where these two male main characters are doing it, and then they shove it in my face at MetroCon and I want to stab my ass out. That's the type of stuff that happened between the period of 2005 and 2009. And I guess for Nadami Cantabile, I feel it's lucky that it came out when it did, in that period, because it allowed it to shine brightest. And I'm not saying it's not a good series, but Nadami Cantabile could have easily been one of those series that are really underlooked because it was overpowered if it came out in 2010 because of all the powerhouses and great anime that came out during that year. So in essence, I think it was good that it came out during that period, but like I said, same time, because of the great story, the great characters, the wonderful, superb, amazing music, both in sort of the pop music and sort of the classical music that's integrated into the series. The beautiful, well, sort of down-to-earth, reality-based, soft art. And the terrific acting on both sides, because I remember the Japanese acting being wonderful as well. This is probably one of the... it's the best series between the period of 2005 and 2009. And probably one of the better anime series ever made. It's definitely something I will watch over and over again. And I definitely think for any serious anime enthusiast, you need to have the series in your collection, or at least in your queue of whatever streaming service. More importantly, if you have Crackle, it has to be in your queue of your streaming service. And if you can get it on DVD, get it on DVD. So at the end of the day, Nodami Cantabile gets a 5 out of 5 from me. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments for this episode, any things you want to say about Nodami Cantabile and let me know about it, or any other reasons you want to contact the show, remember there are numerous ways you can do it. You can contact the show by email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to Facebook and searching out the Absolution Network. Leave us a comment about this episode or whatever you want to do of the show. And remember, any comments that are leave, unless specified otherwise, we'd be fully willing to read on the show. So if you want to get on the show, and yes, I am pimping out that if you want to get heard on the show to write us, leave the comment on Facebook, leave us an email, or leave us a comment on the website, which you can find at an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions sites. Of course, in a couple months, the returning Shaft Plus. Maybe at some point, Mean Gene's anime, though that's on a permanent hiatus right now. Random Redbox Reviews with Chris Stanton, which you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And, of course, you have the Otaku Momentum here on the Absolution Network. Neokaze is doing wonderful job with that. There's a wonderful interview that he does with, of course, our good friend Kyle Hebert. That's great. And, of course, the other podcast that I do on other sites, which includes Tokyo SMS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site that it has Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, the Comic Book Pitch, among others. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all our other friends on the site that you can find, which includes Michael Bailey, which includes his views from Longbox, and the other podcasts he does, like Bailey's Batman Podcast, From Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schlechter's Major Spoilers Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks. You can all find them on the sidebar of the site, along with many others. You know, like Next Dimension Podcast, Clone Saga Chronicles, Batgirl to Oracle, Hey Kids Comics. All of them you can find on the sidebar of the site. Check them out. They do great stuff. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week... Next week... We're going to cover the first season of a series whose second season was on Adult Swim. I do not think that the first season has ever been on American TV. I probably am wrong, and I'll see that in research. But it's a series near and dear to my heart, and a series I've argued really should be made into a live action. If American movie makers want to make a live action anime movie, they shouldn't be trying to make Robotech or Cowboy Bebop. They should be trying to make this series, because it's a series that everybody can get into, because it has everything like spy stuff, pretty girls, you know, bank robberies, pretty girls, wacky comedy, pretty girls, pretty girls, pretty girls. Did I mention the pretty girls? Especially the one beautiful girl with the great rack? But by the way, before I forget, there's pretty girls in this series. Tons of them. You might be thinking I'm talking about a harem. I'm not. Actually, when I say tons of pretty girls, most of them are sad, but it's more important to the one pretty girl that the main character constantly gets, or tries to go after, and gets a spring-loaded boxing glove in the face. I'm, of course, talking about Lupin the Third. Lupin the Third. Da-da! Next week on Tom's Prerogative. So until next time, Machinami Generation, stay golden.
What should I be doing?
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous for you in here.
About does her. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off, and until we meet again, you know the rest.